Hey guys, this is Ishai Breslauer and welcome to the CRE Shark Eye Show, where we discuss commercial real estate. On Mondays, we dive deep into an asset class, and on Thursdays, we go into some inspirational stories for the weekend. Can't wait to start. Let's go. Hey guys, before we continue, I would like to introduce you to the 7-Day CRE Challenge, which will introduce you to commercial real estate and will show you that anyone can do this. Also, I have the free cheat sheet for commercial real estate with the 6 best secrets for commercial real estate. You can download it free. Just click below or above, wherever it is, and get it. Let's continue. Hey guys, today we have a special guest, Dave Seymour from Freedom Ventures. Awesome conversation we had, and I know it because it's pre-recorded, and I really, really enjoyed it. It was really fun, and I'm sure you will too. So let's get to it. So first of all, Dave, it's a pleasure to meet you. It's a pleasure to see you. Meaning, I see you all over the place, and I see Kevin talking all over the place. And I'm sure what you guys do is exciting. And so, you know, we'll start with you. You tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll transfer.
Go ahead. Right. I love it when somebody says, "Tell me about yourself," because it's my favorite subject. That's not true. Long story short, and I will make it short. I talk very often about an entrepreneurial journey, if you will. Okay. I come from a blue collar background in England. I'm actually an immigrant to the United States. I emigrated in '86, and I came here. I think with kind of like stars in my eyes. You know, I was a young guy coming to America. And, I didn't have a great deal of financial education. You know, I was very good at trading time for money. And I understood that philosophy or structure very well. It was what my father told me. He said, don't lie, don't cheat, don't steal, work hard, right? Take care of your family. Just solid, moral fiber, if you will. And I was very good at that, but financially challenged. And, I landed a career that I loved, and if it had given me some financial freedom, we talked about this a little bit, before we came on air. If I was a firefighter and a paramedic, and I worked for 16 years in that career just north of Boston here.
That's amazing.
I loved it. I loved it, man. I loved the camaraderie. I loved the level playing field, if you will, that it created. I loved relying on the guy next to me to get in and out of that building and get to go home to my family,
Incredible.
And I don't want to say that to be overly dramatic, but when you come out into this world, into our world already, I look at you and I say, that's a guy that I would lock arms with, and some exploration, because like will attract like. But anyway, I transitioned out of there, and I had some challenges in my life personally. And I had worked some construction for many years, and I saw in construction that there were these guys and girls who showed up in nicer cars, who were not covered in mud, who seemed to have a bigger smile on their face.
Exactly.
than I did.
It's easier to smile in a nice car.
Yeah, a nice car, clean suit, nice white shirt,
Exactly.
My fingernails are clipped, I studied what they did, and I got a new education, and I immersed myself 200% in real estate investing from the ground up. I say often I'm kind of a blue collar guy in a white collar world. I bring my bulldog mentality to the table.
It's the only one that works.
It's the only one that works. I mean, there's no time for delicacies, shall we say. Yes, always be respectful, all right? But, delicacies, when we start dealing with hundreds of millions of dollars, there's no room for delicacies. We need to be brutally direct. And that has served me well. It's served me very well. And a 12-year career now, in full-time real estate. And there's nothing really in real estate that I haven't touched, from single family, buy, fix, and flip, to private lending, hard money lending, notes, deeds, mortgages, small multifamily, large multifamily, And when COVID decimated our economy and our country, those that pivoted have created an opportunity to succeed. And that's what we did. We pivoted and we went very bullish on the multifamily real estate. I had a little TV show along the way. We did Flipping Boston on A&E Network. I got to meet some pretty cool people who are now, you know, in the TV world, our business partners. Kevin Harrington from Shark Tank is our business development now with what we're doing. So
amazing.
That was kind of short for me. I did pretty good. I did okay there.
That's
You know what? I know you asked me to come talk to you, but I want to hear more about you, my friend.
No problem.
My
pleasure.
Why you gave up being a teacher?
So the past and the transition is a little bit weirdly similar, and I don't find it that is. Often. So kudos to you. Why can't I tell you? That sounds like it sounds very much like me, and I can tell you, I know when I see and feel brother in arms, as we call it. I heard Tony Robbins said many times, and I feel the same way. So I basically also grew up in a different country. I'm in, right now in Israel. And as a guy who went to the army and was an infantry unit and all that stuff, so I know what it is to be in the mud, even though at that time I could sleep on anything on the ground. And today I have to have my mattress in a good hotel. Otherwise, otherwise I became very spoiled.
But you need a hypoallergenic pillow, huh?
Exactly. I have this picture of me with a gun, you know, and the whole thing in, you know, in the house, and I tell my kids, that's a different guy now, you know? Meaning it's the same guy, but I can't do what he did, and obviously I couldn't do what I do now. But anyways, I for many years I was a teacher, and I loved every second, meaning I was teaching kids middle school, high school, and I loved the interaction, loved what I did. And I was running summer camps and did all kinds of things. I was always entrepreneurial in my actions, but I was a teacher. In the end of the day, I was an educator. And at the age of, I think 35, it was, or 35, I understood that I have to do something different to change my finances. And I started reading, meaning I'm not one of those, you know, privileged guys who could go to the places where we now hire people from, you know, NYU, Shaq, you know, those places. And I didn't have that privilege. So I had only one privilege. And I remember reading all these books. It started with the very basic stuff of Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And that was the first thing. And then it went all the way into, I took courses. I went to an informal academy. I started with just learning what everybody's today learning, you know, single family homes and condos and stuff like that. But then it started to go into financing and development and the real stuff. And at a certain point, I got very lucky. I was relentless and I got a very good job. And from that job, without getting into details, we don't have time now, but I got into a very large company. And from that point, I have met few people, just like you said. You saw those guys with the suits, the light, the white, you know, the white shirts, clean, and all that stuff. I met through selling, through being a sales guy who sold high-end condos. That's what I did. I sold high-end condos, and I met few people along the way who bought from me those condos. And you know, at a certain point, what we call in Hebrew, I had this chutzpah. If you know this word,
chutzpah.
It's like being fresh, being like, you know, like direct. I went to them and said, what do you do for a living? You know, it's, you know, all of a sudden the guy says, I do M&A. What's M&A? What's mergers and acquisitions? And this guy is taking lots, is buying them, is consulting them, is building, you know, office buildings, condos. Another guy has a fund, what we do today pretty much. He has a fund and he has multifamily all across the US and all kinds of stuff like that. And that blew me away. I said, oh my gosh, there's a much larger world. And that drew me to study further and further. And I made a decision at the time that, because seeing all these young guys who came out of college early and started, you know, launching their career early, I said, what they do in 1 year, I'm going to do in what they do in 3 years or four, I'll do in one. And that's exactly what happened. And today, I'm sorry I didn't do five in one. Meaning, I said I could do better than that. You know, I could push myself harder. But eventually, I became. Meaning, to make the story short, I got into real estate investment banking in one of the largest firms And then from there, I just went and joined a very large investment company. I started for them a company in New York, which was a development. We focused on mostly condo development, student housing, some student housing we went into, and some office retail, meaning we were all over the place and checking, got into different type of markets. If it's from Brooklyn, Connecticut, Ohio, I also checked, we never got in there, to North Carolina, but fantastic market also. But anyways, I was very active. And today I'm already launching on my own, basically a lot of stuff.
So when you take down an acquisition, are you taking them down in a syndicated format? Is that how you do your business?
So raise
some capital and then
okay. So that's a great question. So in my role in the company, we had two hats basically. We had the hat of the GP and the hat of the LP. Okay. Mm-hmm. In the GP hat, we did everything. We were focused on very specific few deals. And it was, what a general partner does. A sponsor, basically what we call a sponsor, to say the people who don't understand that are listening, I'm sure most of them are, right. Most of them do, is the honcho, is the guy who writes the deal, who does everything. Is the entrepreneur, what we call the sponsor. But so basically as a sponsor, what we did was running everything top to bottom, meaning taking engineers, architects, seeing zoning lawyers, everything. Fighting the municipalities, the whole garbage and the
neighbors.
Exactly. And a lot of stuff. And for that purpose, I had a very good team. And until today, meaning we're in touch all the time. It's just amazing how a team and people, and that's, I think, makes the
everything.
Difference between, those solo, investors who go and buy those single family homes, all those things, to understand that the commercial real estate game is a team work. You can't do it without a team. Yeah. And until today, meaning me and my team, it's even though we don't work together, me and my team, we share deals. It's like, what do we do together? It's an unbelievable thing. And the more connections you have, the more stuff you can do. By the way, to answer your other it was the LP side. We did the LP, meaning, and with the LP, and on the LP hat, that allowed us to go into deals that were way too big for us or out of state was phenomenal. We got into deals from $3 million to $300 million. And I, leading it gives you a lot of pride and tons of potential and growth.
I tell you, it's almost as if we've read each other's script. and I mean that sincerely, honestly. No, I do. I mean that. Because here's what's interesting. You and I have connected only a few times on LinkedIn. Maybe we've watched a little bit of each other's content, great format, and said that it would be beneficial to each other, and then maybe also to people who listen to us to learn what we do. But it amazes me how on the GP and the LP side. So on the GP side, 120, 130 doors in a rougher marketplace. Learn the hard way of property management and, city-run, social programs and, just all of the nuances, the ins and the outs and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then as you now moving over to the other side, I think one thing I learned very early on was the concept of a self-made millionaire. I always found that to be slightly egotistical because to your point, there is no self-made anything, right? Self meaning one. It's
absolutely.
Never one. It's
absolutely.
It's the support. And I go all the way back, without getting too crazy with it, I go all the way back to my wife. I always say my wife is the rock that I get to stand on so I can look cool, right? It's like the foundation starts in my house and then comes out of my home into the business world. And then to build those layers of, I don't know how you feel. I always feel it has to be reciprocal. It's got to be reciprocity. That ultimate win-win type scenario. What values do I have? What skills do I have that I can bring? And then find people who have better skill sets in certain areas that I don't have. So, for example, analysis makes me fall asleep. I'm not fantastic with spreadsheets and data analysis, et cetera, et cetera. But one of my partners, 26 years old, I stole him from Fidelity, right? He was working at Fidelity.
Good
I
one.
I stole this young guy. I'm 54 years old. This guy's 26.
Yeah.
He built something magnificent so he can step into it. But, you know, data analysis, computer skill sets, underwriting process, unbelievable. 100%. Walter, my other partner, you know, 25 years buying, developing multifamily assets in his marketplace. So all I have to do, to your point, is like be the figurehead, push the things, you know, through the pipeline, bring in the relationships, you know, based off of my past experiences. So that team environment with reciprocity, to your point, I feel is critical, right? I don't ever want anybody to feel like they didn't do well in any deal that we did, from the investor getting a double digit return all the way up to the guy who goes in there and stops the faucet from leaking. Everybody on that project should feel good about what they're doing. I don't know whether that's unrealistic. I hope it isn't. I still believe that everybody starts at 100.
I believe that's the way. I agree 100%. You know what? Sure. Let's dig in. Let's dig in a little bit to what we do basically. But I would love to hear your perspective first, and then let's dig into that. Let's talk a little bit about multifamily. What's going on in the market today? Let's talk on the first surface, as we call it, and now we'll start. You know,
go granular. Sure. Look, on the surface, you'll hear that everything is fantastic. A lot of the big operators are consistently reporting, you know, that they've only taken maybe a 2 or a 3% dip in rent. They're shedding a light in the world around multifamily. And look, I'm not one to tear somebody else down to make me look better, but I bring a lot of fundamentals to multifamily investing. And the fundamentals for me are this, is that there is a large percentage, I believe, and I'm seeing it, I don't believe it, I know it. There is a large percentage of multifamily assets that have been purchased in the past, 8 to 10 years. And a lot of those assets have been purchased by people not like you and I, i.e. professionals. Somebody with excess capital says, hey, throw it in there, it's an easy thing to do. And you and I both know that multifamily investing is not easy. When you've got 150, 200, 50 tenants all in one complex, every single one of those people have their own needs, their own personalities that have to be, you know, dealt with. They are our clients, right? We don't buy multifamily assets. What we do is we invest in the people that live there. And in return, they pay us rent for their hard work. So, you know, I feel that a lot of these operators do not have the skill sets to work net operating income. And if you can't work NOI, you can't work valuation, right?
Exactly.
It's not like single family houses, right?
I want to add this. I have a friend of mine who is a manager of a huge fund that they do actually retail here, and you know, all across the US. And he said to me a sentence that went with me for years. He said, the devil is in the details.
Always.
And you got to know the details. You have to work. You know, NOI doesn't just happen. It happens because you drill down into every single line.
Every line.
Take care of it, because the line tells a story, and the story tells you facts, and the facts are things. And those things related to maintenance or management, to roof issues or whatever, or financing. Something's up, and you have to know how to deal with that line and how to implement it in order to have a real NOI. And that's exactly what the problem that you have mentioned. People who are not professional enough, there's no chance. It's not that they're not smart enough. They could be even smarter than both of us together, but they don't have the experience, the know-how, and the training in order to get this thing done. And that requires
here's the point. Your transition from where you were to where you are required years and years and years and years and years of learning and then application. So many people will learn and not apply, learn and not apply.
Exactly.
Right? The application, the feet on the street in the trenches is where the true value, I believe, is created. So when you and I look at a line item and we see a 47% expense ratio, we immediately see that as an opportunity to make money, because I like my expenses in a 35 to 45% expense ratio, depending on the size of the property, blah, 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 blah. And we have all of our, it's almost proprietary in the sense of when we look at the numbers, and I already confessed I'm not super cool on all of the details, but I know enough numbers to be powerful enough as the CEO of this company to say, exactly, that's a problem, that's exceptional, right? Because the amateur will look at an NOI and say, that doesn't make any money. Whereas the professional will, like to your point, will look at an NOI, drill down in there and say, well, why is that maintenance expense that high? What's going on there? Well, that's the guy who's been double invoicing for 15 exactly years, right? That's the guy who's you know, cousins to the property management company, and you know, the owner, us, inexperienced, sitting out in California, we don't understand, we just thought it was going to be a great investment. And then all of a sudden you get a hiccup, you get a challenge, you know, you get a decrease in rent, and all of a sudden the deal doesn't make sense anymore. We're right, actually seeing now pre-foreclosure deals coming to us in multifamily because
yeah,
of,
it's already happening.
Of COVID which, him, but yeah.
So,
yeah.
So tell us a little bit about you know, the foreclosure deals that are coming in. That's very interesting for me to hear.
It's purely off of the fact that these amateurs had no reserves. They had no reserves. They had no skills to pivot and adjust. They look. You and I both.
What
know
what type of LTV is there? Meaning you.
What we're doing
those
now,
foreclosed
these,
assets.
Oh, these are coming in at like 85, 90% loan.
Wow.
Values.
Wow.
That's what the financing was like. And listen, look, why aren't, when we buy today, we buy at a 65% max. And the reason we buy at a 65% max LTV is because our business model is designed around cash flow. So the lower the lower the LTV, the higher
below
the
debt services.
It scales. It's you know, it's like an engine. Yeah. There's a great analogy. It's an engine, right? You got to fine tune the engine. Little less gas, little more oxygen, right?
Right.
So these pre foreclosure deals that we're seeing are based on high LTVs. The debt service just didn't work in the beginning. There's still some of these are still in at like 7.5, 8%. Whereas you know, right now, the one we're closing on a nice little 8 unit, just a small deal. In a couple of weeks, but you know, I just looked at the financing on that thing. We got a 3.5%, 3.5% with our first position lender on there, 25-year note with a 10-year balloon, I think it is. But it's like you start looking at those numbers. No wonder you and I are in the right place at the right time, because the amount of inventory that we're beginning to see, we have zero, and I'm not exaggerating. We have zero outbound marketing for lead generation, zero. And we're underwriting, I would say, we look at 12 a week, we heavily underwrite 4, and we'll walk 2
wow
weekly. And out of those 2, you know, maybe 1 or 2 a month, we'll meet the buy criteria for an LOI and start moving some capital into due diligence. So it's an aggressive time if you know what you're doing.
Yeah. Tell me something. Those going back to those assets that you see that they are in this state of foreclosure, basically. So I understand. Okay.
Yeah.
So we understand how much leverage they took. We understand their issues, but there's one thing that I'm very curious to know. How much revenues are coming in? How much rent is coming in? Meaning is there a problem with the rent?
Yeah, great
are
question.
Those tenants on the side of you know, working class side, are they more A class? Where are they?
Yeah, great question. So these are C plus, B minus type properties. Our business model is to buy B plus properties, B plus properties, core plus. So we're seeing the deficit in the pre foreclosure more in the C plus, B minus areas. So that tells us more of a, you know, a blue collar mindset. And here's where we see the deficiencies. The deficiencies are in rent collection. And I bring, you know, I bring like a little bit of a psychological mindset to this arena as well. With the amount of news we hear on COVID crisis, you know, rent moratoriums, the single family structure in foreclosure right now. You don't have to pay your mortgage, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
That sets up a mindset for people to say, I don't have to pay my rent. And what happens is that the amateurs in the marketplace don't know how to be reactive, right? They don't know how to be proactive. They're always reactive.
Right.
So a professional like us, we're reaching out to our tenants as soon as we see something on the horizon, right? As soon as we because again, it's fluid. It's fluid. So if you're not in a proactive environment, if your management team doesn't have the experience to work these assets, then you're setting yourself up for failure. And that's what's happened with these. We're seeing assumptive loans right now, where we can come in and buy assets for, you know, $40,000-$50,000 in upfront costs and step straight into some of these mortgages. And these aren't even in a deficit. These are assets where the owners, we got one deal right now. There's an owner in Minneapolis who went through all of the craziness that happened out there recently. He had multiple businesses out there. He looked at his 110 door unit complex. It's in underwriting now. But he looked at his complex down in Florida and he said, I want nothing to do with it. I don't want to put another penny in there. He had some more units that needed to be rehabbed. He had some tenancy issues where he needed to, you know, collect some rent, lease up some units. Everything that an amateur does, this guy had done. And then because of all the distractions in his other businesses, he just goes, no more. I'm done. I can't exactly do this anymore. So, there's so many forces, right? There's so many forces.
Because people think they have to, first of all, manage on their own. They don't utilize the right, manpower in the beginning, to begin with, right. And then they run into problem. And then really to back up with that, that's a problem. But
for sure.
One thing I just wanted, drill down, just to share a thought for a second. In my opinion, what we're seeing now, and I would like to analyze this. We have, I'm talking about multifamily specifically. What we're seeing now, and I'm going to drill down for a second into class A, B, and C for a second, because class D, you know, the D class, what we call, Section 8 and HUDs and all those, you know, they'll be the same always. It's the same stuff, same stories, everything's the same. But with A, B, and C, it's not the same. Everything changes now, and the game, and the, you know, it, you have to go back to the, what we call the checkboard and see what you have to do and how to move around and how to get things going. So the way I would do it is the following. First of all, we see A class. Let's talk about A class. Class meaning property. Class A properties. The major cities, we know what's happening. California, you know, Los Angeles, you know, San Francisco, New York City, you know, the big
Boston.
The Big Apple is being eaten, you know.
And, they found a worm in the middle of it.
Exactly, and. And it's not meaning I'm saying with a smile, but I'm not happy. I'm not a happy camper about it, especially as a person who is a very New York type of guy. But, you know, seeing what's going on there. So class A is really suffering. And that is specifically because of two reasons. And the first reason is the COVID reason, you know, elevator issues and social distancing issues and all those things, pandemic. And the other thing is the civil unrest, meaning those are the two major issues.
Sure.
The people, and I don't know the civil unrest now that we are post what we call, elections. I have no idea. I'm not a prophet and I refuse to play one. But we'll have to wait and see what's happening. And those guys from those places, meaning in those classy properties, they moved out to suburbia, right? Rural one. And they moved to houses. Some of them moved out to permanent type of housing. Most of them, and if someone is benefiting from it, from the multifamily end, okay, and not the single family end, are those A-class properties. So nobody can say, and that, I hear it a lot, and that's, I think, a mistake. People saying A-class properties are down. I think it's wrong. A-class properties are down in the major cities because those guys are moving either to single family homes, their homes or other homes, or they're going to lease. They're going to rent in a class A property somewhere in suburbia, somewhere with, you know, a gated community. They're going to move to Florida. They're going to move to all those places.
Did you read my business plan? Did you read my business plan? You've been reading my business plan.
No, I'm not guilty. So those guys, that's what happened to A-class properties. Now in B's and C's, that's where the fine tuning starts, because I think that it's the first time, you know, in, I don't know if it's in history, maybe it's in history, you will tell me, but I think it's almost the first time in history that the B plus and the B's are, you can make like a line between them and the B minus and C's, like literally a line. And it's not so gray anymore. Why? Because the middle class is more spread out professionally. And the working class is very attached to the specific economies that are in that area. So if you see, for example, that sure, a lot of people are working in Walmart or in some kind of place like that, you know, in a certain city that is not in a trashier market, right? And the place that is not as central or secondary or tertiary, basically, but the thing you're seeing that they're working in a certain place. I think that if that place have a problem, and Walmart is not a good example because they're doing fantastic, but I'm saying, sure, you're picking another type of employer that is doing badly because of the pandemic or some retail center or something like that. I don't know, that people work in, and that is what the industry is going to, you know? And those guys don't have jobs. You're going to have this, the class C and B minus are going to really, I think they're going to get hit. What do you think about that?
No, I agree. I agree with a lot of what you say. And here's what I find interesting. So our business model is B class properties in secondary, tertiary MSAs, right?
Right.
So we pick those assets. And then what we do is we double down to your point. We're doubling down on two strategies. One, core plus. I want the B-class asset that has enough movement in there for me to upgrade facilities. So I'm in Florida. So a nicer gym area, a nicer pool area, a nicer office space, maybe taking the old clubhouse and turning it into some smaller office space as part of the complex. And the reason that we're doing that is to your point, those A-class tenants, yes, they have financial debt. But when we start looking at that movement that you're talking about, there isn't enough A-class multifamily assets in the secondary and tertiaries, because the inner city is what's attracted that property in the first place, right?
Right.
They want to be downtown. They want to be New Yorkers. They want to be, you know, LAers, Los Angelians. What is it? Los Angelians? I don't know. I'm going to use that.
Doesn't matter. Yeah,
right? They want.
Anyways, they're leaving.
They're leaving. So, you know, we're not in the business of ground up development building A-class assets. Let somebody else roll those dice.
Right.
But we can move faster, okay? Speed, speed, speed. So if I take 150 unit, you know, B-class property, I take care of the maintenance, the exterior, we upgrade a few things here and there, maybe we put some money into a nice gym, whatever. Maybe put a gate up in front. Now it's a gated community, right?
Right. So now it's a B. Right. Now it's a B plus A minus already.
Now it's a B plus A minus. And here's the thing: I don't have to run my numbers looking for A class property incomes. I can run my numbers on a B class, right? B plus. So I'm not ever pushing the rental amount. I'm going at market value, comparable to what's around me, and yet I've got the nicest complex, you know, on a 3 to 5 mile radius. So to your point, yeah, I see the A's coming down, I see the B's coming up, I see the A's almost becoming a B plus. To your point again, the C's and the D's, they're going to continue to do what they do down there. It's not out my business workhouse, if you will. I like to stay in those other asset classes. But it's definitely an interesting conversation watching what's happening, because it's all location again. It's so specific to those markets.
How cool is it that, you know, talking about myself now, you know, I was, you know, wearing my hat, you know, from my previous hat, as we call it. We were so focused on value add, and value add was aggressive value add, meaning going, seeing a real problem, whether in management or in construction or something that has vacancy, you know, up to 70% vacancy. And we, where we saw gold, right? That's where we saw, that's me. That's where everybody were like, you know, that's the previous market. Everybody said, oh, I don't want it. And I said, wait a minute, let's dig in. Let's see where, if there's a possibility. And if I found something that would be interesting or development, you know, something that is, why was that? Because, you know, everything was so, the market was so hot. Everybody was running everywhere buying. And now the value add became from those large, right, arbitrage, I would say, you know, development. Value add. All of a sudden, the value add became what you speak about. The small numbers, the tiny upgrades, the, you know, taking one thing from here and then making it there. And that is so cool, in my opinion.
And here's what we did with it too, and that's so cool that you pulled that out of my chatter, because you've hit the nail on the head. So I've got one complex, and I can raise the NOI, you know, a couple of points, whatever, right, on the bottom line. But that's not enough, right? So now it's like scalability, and what's happening is the market allows us now to scale. So our fund is a $100 million fund, not super huge, but not super small, right? $100 million fund. So with $100 million in private equity, I can buy $300 million worth of core plus assets all in one marketplace. So I become super dialed in. I don't have to go to the Carolinas. I don't have to go to Texas. 100%. I don't have to go to Georgia. I don't have to expand out when the team for us has already been built in one marketplace, the Gulf Coast region of Florida. So when we look at that core plus strategy, I have so much to choose from that I can offer double digit returns targeted to my investors with confidence, because now I can build up that database. Fund one, done. Now we start building out for fund two. We can get into some lending and some other things going forward. But that one strategy, every one of the properties that we underwrite for acquisition, the majority of the heavy lifting has been done. They've got all of their hurricane windows. They've got all their hurricane tie roofs. They've done all the big stuff, right? Systems, air conditioning, all of that. All of roofing. Tick that box, tick, tick, tick. So then we go in with the easy stuff, kitchens, bathrooms, landscaping, repositioning, remarket, bad tenants out, good tenants in, property management done, next. Let's do another one and another one, another one. And then we hold for a 5 to 7 year strategy for exit. So yeah, you got it, man. I mean, you hit exactly what, that's why I said to you, are you reading my business plan? Because that's really what it is.
I wish, I should have.
Well, you got it now.
It sounds fantastic. Let me ask you this. You guys playing mostly general partners or limited partners? What game you like to be?
Yeah. Now, great question. So we're a management company. So Freedom Venture Management manages all of the assets, okay? And then our investors come in buying shares of the company. So we're a 506C Regulation D fund. We are the managers. We run everything. We make the decisions. It's all laid out in our PPM.
Mostly accredited guys.
Like I said, sorry?
Accredited investors, mostly, obviously.
Accredited investors, only accredited. $100,000 minimum investment. Most of our conversations around the 250 to 500. We're talking to some institutions right now who are in due diligence. It's difficult, and I don't know. I'm sure you've experienced this. The biggest challenge we had very early on is a syndicated deal to raise capital. One deal. It's easy. Here's the deal. Here's the pictures. Here's the property. Here's the plan.
Right.
This is what we need to execute.
Fund is not easy.
Here's your return.
Fund. Fund structure is not simple.
It's like the human, you know, disposition visually says, okay, my money is on that house, and that's palatable to the retail investor. Now we say to them, well, your money, your capital isn't on that one deal. You own shares in a company that owns all of these deals.
Right.
Right. And then they're like, what? Isn't that a REIT? No, that's a publicly traded REIT. This is a private investment. This is a private fund, you know?
So you know what? The interesting Let me just jump in on that. That's very interesting because yeah. I worked at the time, for BDO. If you know BDO, it's one of the.
Oh yeah, people who know BDO.
In Israel, I was the head of real estate investment banking at the time. But anyways, yeah. Very interesting thing. So I dealt with some, bond, all kind of things that are very interesting. And sure. What I learned and what I remember is that when it comes to exactly what you're talking about, the structure of fund versus an individual investment, what we call, sure. It's so interesting because when you come to the individual person, the individual guy, if you're an individual, and also it's understood, it makes sense. If you come to an individual guy and he comes already into real estate and he's not a real estate guy per se, of course he would want to see the deal and he yeah. wants to get related to it. It's also an emotional thing, I guess. But
of course,
when it comes to a fund, it's a whole different perspective. So the larger funds, semi-institutional, all the institutional investors, the way I see it, they have two sets of philosophies. One philosophy is to go and that's from, talking to them and dealing with them. But anyways, the one philosophy that they have is to either go for large mega deals, not 150 units or something like that, but to go right. to those huge corporations who buy a yeah. billion-dollar portfolios or property, whatever it is, yeah. $900 yeah. million, dollars, those types.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
that's where they can deploy, a certain amount of money, come in with a 40% or 30%. They have the limits. Each country has their own rules, and they come in mm-hmm. with their limits, but they have a very strong position. They're a very powerful LP, and that's how they come in. That's one type of strategy they come in with. Second yeah. type of strategy is the fund strategy, is to come and tell them, listen, we have a lot, meaning properties, we have a huge portfolio, and that's what we have. And now we're building a fund of, let's say, X amount of money that is really fitting them. Let's say $100 million or $200 million. Yeah. Numbers that can already talk to them, or even $80 million, but something that they can relate to because it's large enough, it's sizable.
Right. Right.
And then they say, okay, let's go and show me what you can invest in. What's your strategy? But you know what the downside in that strategy is? You have to have a lot of properties, huge portfolio, and that's what they have to see. So, and the other problem, and I don't know if a lot of people are not designed for that, is they are so slow, baby. They are so slow. They can't move.
Yeah.
Committee, another committee, and you have to dance and do the little, every single time. Yeah. And it's not easy.
Yeah.
So kudos to those who can do it every single time. Why can I tell you? It's not simple.
Here's the thing, man. The business model just makes sense, right? By underperforming assets, right? Make them more profitable. Hold them for 5 to 7 years, sell them for a profit. I mean, the business model is just so simple, okay? And the challenge I find is this, is that even with a track record of 125 million raised, 125 million deployed, paid back to the investors, double digit returns, 20% targeted IRRs, proven out over and over and over again, as soon as it comes to that fund structure, and so it should be, by the way, they then drill down into the operators, because really what they do is they're investing in the people first, because the business, I don't have some secret sauce. I don't have something that somebody has never done before.
Right.
So why invest with us, right? Well, you invest with us because of the track record, because of the people, because of the communication, because of the systems, because of the, right? So that's where it really gets interesting. And I would love to tell you we've been, super successful in the race. It's a challenge. I mean, we started in July. Our filing was finished and we went, it now allowed us the opportunity to raise capital publicly. And we're kind of 50% of where we would want to be. I had a fund, you'll appreciate this. I had a fund manager, an institutional investor. He said to me, he said, if I write you a check and I take out your fund for $100 million and I do it in one go, He said, how fast can you deploy the capital and start paying the quarterly distributions? And look, my wheelhouse is my wheelhouse. My game is getting elevated every single day. It's elevated having a conversation with you today, right? We learn from everybody we talk to. And I said, can you hold on a second? I need to make a phone call. And I called Walter, my partner in Florida, who's, you know, runs point on all our acquisitions. I said, if I give you $100 million tomorrow, how fast can you spend it? But spend it right. Don't go outside of our buy box. He said, He said, in all truth and honesty, he said, I could buy $300 million worth of real estate in our marketplace, in our target area. He said, I could buy it in, you know, 90 days, cash flow 30 days after that. I said, that's aggressive. But, you know, that's where it's at. That's what these guys are looking for. They're looking for those larger takeout partners. But the game goes on, man. I mean, I'm talking to some professional athletes now. I've got a couple of ex-MLB pitchers. Yeah, a couple of ex-MLB pitchers who want to play. And to go full circle on that conversation, the reason that the conversations are so good with those guys, they're blue-collar guys, you know? They're not – they don't have the Harvard degrees and the Yale University stuff.
Right.
You know, no right or wrong. I'm not tearing anybody else down. But, you know, I just like – I like a zero-degree conversation, you know? Whether it's with with a fund manager or an institution, or whether it's an individual. So
you know what? That's exactly meaning. You're talking about that, and that's meaning from where we came from. So that's exactly what motivated me. Meaning when COVID hit and I found myself less mobile, you know, just like everybody else, I guess.
Sure.
Meaning I couldn't just sit still. You know, that's the type of people we are. And I just started writing down stuff, and that, you know, everything I know about commercial real estate, alongside of looking at all kind of deals that came in, and things were still unknown at the time. And where is it going? And those notes became a course, and I made a course. And this course is like for beginners, meaning I was thinking about myself.
Yeah.
What would make my life easier back then? So I made a whole course for them. So that's what I'm basically.
That's awesome.
I got really busy with that. And that's, I'm promoting a course today also. So that's very cool. So talking, like you said, talking to people in your,
Degrees. Yeah.
Zero degrees, you called it. So that's very cool.
And that's
my vision also. I wanted to ask you something. What do you think about, everybody's talking about, meaning that's the next thing. And that is, it's more like my thing. Even though now I'm looking into more multifamily, but I'm already what we call smelling the coming, you know, attractions, as we call it. I'm looking at the previews of the next, of 2021. And what I'm looking at is, meaning obviously retail, but I'm looking at hospitality. And that's what I want to talk about.
Sure.
Hospitality. Sure. And why am I talking about hospitality now? Because everybody's talking about what are we going to do with these either white elephants or those buildings that are, you know, are standing out there or going to stand out there and going to be foreclosed and trouble is going to come and hit the fan and things are already happening. Sure. What do you think about this talk about conversions, you know?
Conversions,
Because I have a lot of opinions about it, but I really love to hear what you think about it.
You know, I can only give you a 30,000 foot view because I've been so focused, you know.
I know, that's good enough. Meaning it's two guys talking.
You know, look, the 30,000 foot view for me is leisure will come back. People will travel again. Human beings' memory is always short, right?
Yeah, I believe that too.
24 months from now, you know, Parker Meridian, New York City, one of my favorite hotels, right?
Right.
After 9/11, you could get a room at the Parker Meridian for, you know, $60 a night. I called Parker Meridian recently because I was actually going to go to the city and meet some clients. And I called Parker Meridian. They're closed. They closed the hotel. Now, is Parker Meridian going to go out of business? Are they going to convert that to high-end condominiums? I think the answer to that is no. But what I will tell you is this. We still have that housing shortage. And if somebody has the financial depth, and it's not me, it's not my business structure, but if somebody has that financial depth to look at some of those assets and play a long game, a 36 month, even a 48 month fruition on those assets, I think there's a lot of money to be made there.
So that's exactly what I think. And I think that, and I know who is that, and you probably know who to know too. And these are the families, the family offices mostly, the, you know, sure, the private families that have deep pockets, that are in the sure game for a long time. They're not those type of guys who are doing, you know, what I did, what you do, you know, syndicating money or fundraising, raising capital. Those guys have private money. They have resources that you can't even imagine. And they're just waiting on the fence to just, like a Pac-Man, go and eat and eat.
Yeah.
And that's what they were waiting for. Exactly. Yeah. I believe that too.
Yeah, I agree. I'd be interested to see when that starts to move. I don't think it's now.
No.
Think it's maybe 12 months out. And then, so you got a 5-year exit strategy on that plan if you started preparing for it today and doing your due diligence on it. You know, a lot of these, even if you take it down to a smaller scale, a lot of these strip malls in New York, you call them taxpayers, you know, a couple of stores downstairs, 24, 48 units upstairs, that kind of stuff. You know, even those have the ability, I think, to convert, taking some of that retail, that smaller retail from downstairs, converting it to residential, if zoning allows.
Exactly. That's a big question. The big question is New York City.
Yeah, because then it's parking. It's, you know, look, movement of people, et cetera, et cetera. So
look, from where the city is going today, you know, with more affordable housing that they want to move, you know, with their current mayor, as we call it, it's a possibility. But, you know, I think that the big cities are the place that, you know, right now they're put on hold, meaning we don't know what will happen. We do know that they'll come back. New York City will be back.
Of course.
Will it be 3 years? Will it be 7 years? Will it be 5 years? We don't know. There are all kind of voices all over the place. And that's why the game is so dangerous. But, you know, a lot of people, you know, from the larger funds are talking already about, you know, especially meaning in different countries. You know, different countries like in Israel, like in Europe and all kind of places. Sure. They're saying, let's buy New York City. Wait.
It's the same thing with the large malls and things of that nature. I know an investor tried to take down a mall for 700 million. It was a conglomerate of malls. And one of my private investors said, why should I do your fund when I could do that? And look, I'm buying those things at 75 cents on the dollar, whatever he quoted me. And I said to him, look, man, there's no right or wrong. It's just educated decisions that we make in our world.
Right.
You know,
everybody with a strategy.
You don't find out right or wrong until 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years from now. I said, but here's my take on it. I'm going to be able to buy that retail space at 35 or 40 cents on the dollar a year or two years from now. So
which question I would ask? That kind of an investor would come to me. The one question I would ask, and it always comes down to that question. I mean, obviously everybody could be wrong. Everybody could make a mistake. That's 100%. We're not gods and stuff. But it comes down to one question. The question is, if a person would tell me, I want to invest, you know, in that mall, 75, you know, cents of the dollar, whatever you call it.
This is
a great opportunity and all that stuff. The question I would ask is, with who are you investing?
That's right.
And who
That's
is that
it.
Person?
Yes.
If it's a new fund, like you know, like an opportunity fund that came up and says, "Yeah, we want to find opportunities," I would stay away. It's like fire.
Run away, run.
But if it's a guy who does retail for the past 20 years, and that his current strategy, that would be pretty interesting, you know?
That's worth it.
I'm not saying it's the thing to do, but that's already something to think about.
Yeah.
You know, the guy knows what he's doing. He's been through some certain downturns. He knows what he, you know, that's a different game already. So
For sure.
So the who is a big thing.
Yeah, the money goes to work with the managers. You know, the physical real estate and the execution and the business plan. I mean, that's ticking boxes. The track record.
100%.
Dude, it's like I got a new brother sitting in Israel. I love
it's cool.
I love
it's it. Very cool. Listen, I'm having a lot of fun here. We could go. I think we could go until tomorrow, but you know, we have work to do.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. No more playtime. It's time
exactly,
to go to work.
Exactly.
What can I do for you, man?
So first of all, I'll tell you what. First of all, it's a pleasure. I'm going to put, obviously, we're recording this. I'm going to put it, first of all, on my thing, on my podcast. It's called the Yishai Breslauer CRE Shark Eye Podcast. Shark Eye, because we need shark eyes to see and look and learn a deal. That's where we have to be. Yeah, we can't be less than that. And that's very important. So that's my podcast. It's a new podcast. But I'm going to put it there. I'm going to put it there. I have on LinkedIn, you can look in my profile.
Very
I
get cool.
A fair good amount of followers over there. And this will be on so they can get to know you, first of all. And I'd love to give you value. And whoever wants to, you know, get to know Dave and their investment, what their activity, you heard about this. And it seems like, not only seems like, but it sounds like that they know what they're doing time and time again. And that's so important. And as per me, right now, meaning I'm on the fence, I'm looking at all kind of cool stuff. We'll see what happens. But I'd love to discuss with you in private further. We'll see what happens right now. But right now, I can tell everybody what I have now. I have a new course, you know, for guys who are, if you could share also with your guys, I have a new course for commercial real estate beginners, for people who want to get into the business and they want to get their feet wet and want to learn the business, something that me and Dave had to break our teeth to do. You can do it much easier in 60 days. That's what I created. And that's pretty cool. And that can be accessed, meaning I'll share with you the link. You could put it down there.
Yes.
And you'll give me your link and I'll share it, with me. And that'll be great. And we should keep in touch. We could see what we could do together.
We will keep in touch. That's 100%. We absolutely will keep in touch.
I'd love to hear about the things that you do right now, meaning specifically we can't, obviously, according to, you know, we know the rules. We can't share specifics, on the air, but I'd love to hear. Really love to hear.
Okay. I appreciate your time, my man. Really, really did appreciate
pleasure.
Your call.
One it's of the pleasure. Best, thank you
one
so
of the
much.
Best conversations I've had in a while.
Take care of yourself.
Take care, man.
No problem. My pleasure. Take care. Hey guys, thanks for joining me in this CRE Shark Eye Show. I hope you enjoyed it. And go subscribe, download, do whatever you guys need to do. And I'll see you in the next episode. Take care of yourselves.